everybody please turn off their phones? There's an echo.
Right.
It was suddenly in an echo.
It's too low, you can't hear. If it's high enough, it's gonna get the key. So it's a balance.
We thought that was for Halloween, not Halloween.
It's a one. Is this the listener device ready?
Yeah.
Okay.
We're on.
Good afternoon. The Metro Access meeting will start. If you have any phones, would you please cut them off because this meeting is being taped. I am Denise Rush and I'm the Vice Chair of the Metro Access Subcommittee. We will introduce ourselves going to my left.
Phil Pershing, Arlington, Virginia.
Talitha Lizelle, Washington, D.C.
Donna C. Rebush, Washington, D.C.
Darren Valley, Jeff S. County.
Charlie Crawford, Silver Spring, Maryland.
Carol Lopez, Office of ADA Policy and Planning.
Cheryl O'Connor, Metro Access Office of Eligibility.
Metro Access.
William Proctor, Metro Access.
Allison Anderson, Metro Access.
Eva, Metro Access.
Stephanie Thorne, Metro Access. Janice Carpenter, Metro Access.
Toby Schaefer, ADA Policy and Planning.
Nicole Murray, Metro Access. Lena Barber, Metro Access.
Heidi Case, Project Action.
Albert Freeman, Superman. Robin Wolf, Diamond Transportation.
Hi, Leland Peterson, MV Transportation.
Is that everyone?
Yes.
If there's somebody from the public who wants to speak, make sure your name is written on the list. Okay. Now we would like to have a review of the agenda and the minutes. First, the agenda.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I'd like to add an item to the agenda to have about 5 to 10 minutes to talk about the budget process, which began last Thursday. And I think Mr. Sheehan's going to come in a little later and we'd like to talk a little bit about the Bill of Ride.
Yes, I would like to have that added to the agenda, Abilities Ride. Because some of us attended the pre-conference on Friday, and Charlie, Paul, myself, and Pat attended. We can talk about that. So the review of the agenda with the amendments, can I?
We
accept it. All in favor?
Aye.
Those who oppose? The ayes have it. All right, and now we review of the minutes.
Move we accept the minutes as presented.
I second it.
The minutes have been accepted. All in favor?
Aye.
Any oppositions? Ayes have it. Yes. We're going to do the customer service and outreach report.
Good afternoon. While we are awaiting the representative from MTM to provide the customer service public comment report from our last session, I just wanted to give a report on the outreach since our last session. Mr. Nash, a member of our staff with Metro Access, was out with the folks at CHI Centers. They're located in Silver Spring, Maryland, for a parent meeting to answer questions and provide information about Metro Access services as well as other accessible services within WMATA. He was very well received from that group and continues to have dialogue with them regarding Metro Access service for the customers in which they serve. So we're happy to say that that outreach went very well. So with that, I'd like to call Ms. Jen Weber up to give the report regarding public comment from our last session.
At the last meeting, there were 7 comments, and all customers have been contacted, and the issues have been followed up on.
And you have a copy of that information within your packets, should you have any additional questions. Thank you. Not this month, I'm sorry. Not this month.
We have Cheryl O'Connor.
O'Connick.
I'm sorry. And she's going to give us a presentation concerning the Metro Access ID conversion program. Are you available? Are you here?
Yes. Thank you.
Mrs. Chair, we're still working to get the display system working. So she's going to discuss it. Members may get to see the information. We're having some challenges with the display. But if not, we'll make sure we forward it to members so that they will know what she's talking about. But as soon as we get it done, we'll have it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. As this committee is aware, Metro is currently in the process of creating a plan that will lock the emergency gates in an effort to address the issue of lost revenue as the result of unauthorized access to the system. The committee and the disability community have expressed concerns regarding the impact that locking the gates will have for riders with disabilities who are conditionally eligible and utilize the free ride benefit for Metro Bus and Metro Rail. In an effort to address this concern and also to provide autonomous entry for conditionally eligible riders, the Department of Access Services has partnered with the WMATA Office of the Treasurer to develop a new Metro Access ID card for conditionally eligible customers and their PCAs that will provide the free ride benefit on a Smart Trip platform. The new ID card will allow customers and their PCAs to utilize Metro Rail and Metro Bus for no charge. The card can also be used throughout the system when riding on the buses of jurisdictional partners. The same benefits that are provided currently by the jurisdictions will be maintained with this ID. For example, example, if a customer is currently needing to flash their conditional Metro Access ID card to ride for free, they will be able to utilize this new ID card as a Smart Trip card when boarding and ride for free. Conditionally eligible customers who currently receive a reduced rate or no discount when riding with jurisdictional partners will continue to have the same fare, but will be able to add value to this ID card to pay those fares that are discounted or not free. In addition, the card will also be available to use for parking. It should be noted that there will be no discount for parking when utilizing this Smart Trip card, and that the cards will not have any preloaded value when issued. A corresponding PCA card has also been created and will be issued in conjunction with each conditionally eligible Metro Access Smart Trip ID card. The PCA card will allow whoever is traveling with the customer to access the system for the same fare as the ID card holder. When not traveling with the customer, or if the PCA card is used more than 90 seconds after the customer or at a different Smart Trip target in a rail station, the PCA card will function as a full fare Smart Trip card. We did have a visual to put up on the screen of the new card, but I'm going to describe it to everyone in addition. The examples of the existing Metro Access card, you're familiar with the current conditional eligibility card, which is a white card with the customer's photo information on it and the Metro Access logo. For the new card, we've utilized the same color scheme as the new Ramada buses, with a gray background and a red, white, and blue swoosh across the bottom of the card. There is a Metro N and a Smart Trip logo at the top. The customer's photo is on the left, and the name, ID, and expiration date is on the middle of the card. The card also states on the bottom that it is intended for the authorized user to board Metro Access, Metro Bus, and Metro Rail, that the card is the property of the Washington Metropolitan Area Transit Authority and must be produced on demand by WMATA personnel or MTPD if they request it. The PCA card has the existing Smart Trip background and the letters PCA in bold black print on the left. The cards are currently being produced and will be mailed out to all impacted, conditionally eligible customers by the end of the year. Upon receipt of the new card, the white Metro Access card will no longer be valid for use in the system as a flash card. Following mailing, the cards will be produced by the Office of Eligibility and mailed to the customer at the time of certification. The Office of Eligibility will also be registering the cards when they are sent. The card will deactivate if the customer is not recertified in accordance with eligibility policies at the time of renewal. The office will also be providing information on how to utilize the card when we send it, and we are in the process of creating that accompanying information in a number of accessible formats, and also Spanish will be available for customers who request either an accessible format or in Spanish. The initial card will be issued at no charge to the customer. Replacements will be issued through the Transit Accessibility Center. ID cards that are lost will be $10 for the first replacement and $25 for subsequent replacements. Cards that are stolen will be replaced for no charge with a copy of the police report documenting the theft, and cards that become illegible or stop working will be replaced for no charge if they are provided at the time of replacement. PCA cards that are lost will be $2 for a replacement. Any balance that was on the card will be transferred at the time of replacement. The Department of Access Services is looking forward to providing this opportunity to promote safe, reliable, and independent travel for our Metro Access customers who utilize the bus and the rail system. Thank you. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yeah, I have a couple of questions about the PCA card. If your PCA is a senior citizen and they use the card, will they get the senior discount when not using it with you?
The PCA rule travel, it's a forfeit Metro card, and so if they are a senior citizen and
so they have two cards then.
Yes, so if they're not traveling with you and they qualify for discounted rates based on their age, they should use their senior's Metro card.
The other question I have is the 90-second gap.
Mm-hmm.
That means that we have to go through first and they come through second, and sometimes they may have to go through first, so is it okay if they just swap cards? You know, for that one particular day?
Yes.
So we tested these cards pretty extensively. So if you go through and I'm your PCA and Cheryl cuts between us, it's not going to be a problem. When she comes in after the second person, it'll still relate to your card.
As long as the two cards are scanned at the same target, then
you're getting your separate gates.
Correct.
Is it going to be any of the gates or just the disability gate?
Anything.
Sounds great. And one more personal question.
Oh, sure.
I'll be out of town from December 10th until April something, so will you mail my card to someplace else if I give you a forwarding address?
If you provide us with updated contact information, we'd be glad to make that happen.
Okay, thank you.
We'll cancel
you. That's right, yeah.
We'll send it to Tevin.
We have different methods for snowbirds.
How do you know if a client needs a PCA card?
Every client will be issued the PCA card so that they can decide if they need a PCA for that trip or not.
Thank you. Two thumbs up.
We like that response.
Anyone else have a question?
We anticipate having, we will have the cards now by the end of the year. Yes, ma'am.
Hi. Yes, I have a question. I see very often where people with the regular fare cards have problems, and their money is on there because I listen to the conversation. So if somehow it's deactivated at the time you're on a trip, then what?
Just like you would a regular SmartTrip card, you just address that with the station manager, I'll let you through, then contact us so we can get a replacement card made and figure out what's going on. It's going to act exactly like a regular SmartTrip card does for you know, with us. If mine doesn't work, I just tell the station manager I got money. They can check on their system to make sure there's money, which also is a bit of fraud prevention, because if somebody tries to make one that doesn't work through the gate and they put it on the embossed internet immediately, then it's a fake card.
Anyone else?
Any other questions?
I want to thank you for your presentation, and that's good news.
Thank you.
Friends, office is doing a good job.
Phil?
Yes.
Show floor.
This is a little bit out of the agenda, but the budget process started last Thursday with a pre-budget presentation to the Finance Committee, which is the committee of the whole of the board. And their timetable is, after many comments from the board at their presentation, to have staff come back at the November finance meeting with their revision to the meeting. And following that, there will be a setting of hearings which will take place after the first of the year on the budget. And so if anyone has had a chance to look at what I mailed out last week, which is the original budget presented to the committee, it has some pretty draconian measures on there. They'll meet a very, very large shortfall. There's going to be a lot of discussion ranging from Mr. Evans, who doesn't want anything to happen to have the jurisdictions pay the difference to make up the shortfall, which I will predict is not going to happen, to 10% increases in fares for bus, rail, and metro access. And of course, we have to remind them that there's no way to do a 10% increase in metro access if you do a 10% increase in bus and rail, unless we change the multiplier.
Yeah.
And so we are going to have to spend a lot of time educating people and coming up with alternatives. They're talking about eliminating bus routes, closing rail stations during the off hours, They gave a chart showing what the subsidies are, and there are some bus routes in Fairfax County that are subsidized by $14 per rider. And those may have a short lifespan unless people are going to show up for the hearings. So I'm giving everybody an alert. I will remail all of that information to everybody, and at the AAC meeting, be prepared to organize a fair policy work group with a chairman, because I will be in the sunshine of Florida while this is all going on. I'll still be paying attention online, and you will still be offended by all my emails, but there need to be warm bodies showing up and talking to people. In order to get this done, the current board is made up of 17 new members, half of whom have never been through the budget process.
There's only 16.
Okay, so there's 13 new members. But the point is, we need to get people to talk to their individual representatives on the board and explain to them what the problems are with Metro Access and the disability community. And tell them your stories, and tell them the stories of the people that you represent. I will send out a list of all of the current board members by jurisdiction to everybody. So the people in D.C. know who to talk to, the people in Maryland know who to talk to, and the people in Virginia know who to talk to. And you'll find that that conversation is very, very effective in, one, us learning what their problems are, and them learning what our problems are. So heads up, it's going to be a tough trip between now and January, February. Thank you.
Please include advocates in your emails.
Where do you get mine anyway, honey?
Yeah, I do.
Oh, I'll add you on.
Phil, when you say a 10% increase, what is that amount increasing? Approximately increasing Metro Access. Okay. So if they increase it by 50 cents.
Then it's a dollar for Metro Access.
It's a dollar for Metro Access.
Because it's times two. What they're proposing, staff proposed, that they raise bus fare from $1.86 to $2 flat. Or $1.75 to $2 flat. So they want a $2 flat fare. For the rail, they're talking about changing the distance multiplier by 1 to 2 cents per quarter of a mile or tenth of a mile or whatever the distance is. But the overall statement that they made in the presentation was 10% for everybody, and so if it's 10% for everybody, that means double 10% for bus or rail when they calculate your Metro Access fare. So the Metro Access fare would be doubled. Now, they're not talking about raising the maximum Metro Access fare. So the Metro Access fares that will be increased will be the current base Metro Access fare. Will have to go up to $4. And then everything else in between that will go up by an equivalent amount.
The $6.50 wouldn't go up?
No. That wasn't in the proposal. They had proposed to possibly increase the maximum for rail riders, but not the maximum for Metro Access. That was not mentioned. So our maximum, according to the first proposal. Now, this was the first proposal. They had a lot of comment from the board at the meeting. And they're to come back at the November meeting with a second proposal. And then we'll see in November what they say. And then we go on from there with public hearings in December. They'll have to put together not on the ballot. God, I just forgot the name. Christian, they're putting together what we have to talk about. A docket. Thank you. They will put together a docket which will be presented at the public hearings, and then we can talk at the public hearings. We can respond to the online surveys. We can write letters, and again, we can talk to them personally to give them our viewpoint. They will also have to do a Title VI analysis of everything that they propose to do to see if it fits. So this is going to go on for this month, November, December, January.
All right.
let's see. Oh, Paul Summerford, Metro Access Subcommittee Chair. Welcome, everyone. I see. Let me put in order. Tap in. We got Darnese. Anyone else wanting to speak? All right. Tap in, then Darnese.
Yeah, Phil, you were there in the meeting. I read that proposal was made to the partners, the D.C. And Maryland and Virginia, to contribute 1 cent sales tax. What, how did it go, and what was the decision on that, and how was it?
There were lots of suggestions, and none of them were universally accepted by anybody, and so they were just given to the general manager and Mr. Onosiki to come up with a plan for their next meeting. Yes.
Yes, please.
The 1 cent, there was not, I'm not speaking at the board discussion, but there was a meeting of
I saw a video and news reports about a meeting with Governor Hogan, Governor McAuliffe, and Mayor Bowser. And as she is very much in support, they were talking about a half cent and then realizing really it may be a full cent sales tax. Mayor Bowser is in, which would be directly for, automatically go to Metro to fund it. But we are the last, one of the only large city metro systems that does not have any direct funding, like by sales tax or something, that automatically funds it. Governor Hogan was absolutely against it. Governor McAuliffe was more in the middle, but his point was that he wanted to see results that A, the safety, et cetera, was improving, and that they were going to use the funds well. Although my personal comment would be, it kind of takes money to show that they are able to improve it. So that's kind of a tough one.
All right, Darnese, and then on the closure and recap what we're going to do today.
Excuse me, this is Darnese. My concern about the 10% for Metro Access Riders, I still have a complaint now because Metro Access Riders within DC to DC are often charged $650 per trip. And it doesn't make a lot of sense because this evening when I go home, I'm still DC to DC, but I have to pay $650 to get home today. It's very inconsistent. Last meeting, I left the same time, it was 5:10. The time before that, it was 5:80. But quite often, I pay out of pocket every day to use Metro Access. And the rides are very inconsistent, but usually border on the most, most costly amount.
All right.
So I have deep concerns for that.
So what is the subcommittee wants to do now we've gotten viewpoints on this topic? What is the consensus right now so we can move on at this point?
Well, what I want to do is do this as an informational item, let people know that I will send out the material I sent out again last week and take a look at the budget. And at the next AAC meeting, be prepared to put together a fair policy working group and start meeting.
All right, thank you. So next thing, I think Denise wanted to talk about is abilities, right? So let me recap here what's on the agenda. I know eligibility. Cheryl probably wants to talk about Metro Access ID conversion.
You
already did it? Oh, okay.
It was done.
Oh, it's done? Travel? Oh, it's done? Oh, okay. Everything? Abilities, right?
Ability. No, we haven't done.
Oh, okay, so now we can discuss what happened on, I guess, Friday's meeting.
Do you want to start?
You can start. Go ahead.
Well, Charlie?
Yes.
Do you have a comment about the meeting?
Right. Hey, good time to say that.
Good time was
I need to lower the volume on this thing. I'm going to blast it away. I'm going to move it far away there. How's that? That's a little...
Maybe that works.
Okay. I think so. I don't know. I can hear myself, so I guess everybody else can. Okay, thank you. Well, Friday was a good presentation, I thought, from Umada on the elements of the proposed program, and a number of vendors were there. And they had a lot of questions pretty much around the financial, fiscal aspects of it. And Christian Blake presented on the programmatic functions of it. And Christian Kent also gave some testimony with regards to it. The thing that I found important was discussions that related to part five of the proposal. As a proposal, for anybody that's familiar with bureaucratic documents, knows that there's a lot of stuff in there, and it's all important in its own context, but has little to do with reality as far as the people writing the service are concerned. The bottom line, as far as I could tell, was that they want to have a vendor or multi-vendors, the likelihood of multi-vendors being more popular, and that those multi-vendors would include local businesses to the extent they could be incorporated, and the system would operate with $5 to all the consumers who take the ride, and the next $15 would be paid for by Metro, and then if the trip was over at that point, if it costs $20, then the $5 charge would be that which the consumer would pay. If the trip costs more than $20, then the difference between the $20 and the ultimate cost would be borne by the consumer. So a $30 trip would be pretty much $15 for the consumer. That's the original 5 plus 10, and 15 for Metro, paying between 5 and 20. Some references were brought up with regards to smartphones and apps, but there was not a direct reference to telephones, except to the extent that the comment was made that there would have to be equity for persons using phones. Now, how that ultimately translates is a question that will need to be answered. But as we were told, we have until October 20th to submit written questions to A.W. Campion, that's C-U-M-P-I-A-N, at umada.gov. I think that's the address. It's not. Okay.
It's J.W. Campion, C-U-M-P-I-A-N, at umada.com.
So I was off by the...
J.W. C-U-M as in Mary, P-I-A-N as in Nancy, at WMATA.com.
That's, you can ask in writing, questions in writing to him, and he will answer those questions. And all comments, all proposals, responding to the request for proposals have to be in by, is it November 2nd?
November 9th.
November 9th at 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Not 1 minute past.
Sorry?
Not 1 minute past.
Well, yeah, not 1 minute past.
That's correct.
And that was said like 65 times, so, you know. I think they meant it, yeah. So, the questions there are two ways to ask questions. One could be the committee could ask a question, and I would encourage that. But I also think that individuals should send in questions as well, so that we address the issues, especially of telephone access and whether or not there's going to be a system whereby somebody calling in can actually get a ride and do that with relative ease, in the same way that a person using a smartphone would be able to get a ride as well. So that there shouldn't be any real difference between the services. But there was only a little bit of discussion with regards to that. And so it really is important that we clarify to the extent we can what was meant by what I just talked about. And the last that I would want to point out is I think Carol Tyson, I don't know if you're here, Carol, but she did an incredibly good job of asking questions of the people there, and she'll be submitting those questions in writing as well, so that a lot of our concerns were very well represented by her.
All right. And also what I saw, because I was there before I let Denise go, Paul Summerford, at this meeting, is I'm glad Metro is putting in an extra $10 incentive. So if someone does use this trip, they are who uses a mobility device, there is an extra $10 incentive. There's still the basis of $10, but the starting, if I'm understanding correctly, will be $25 if it's a rider who's using a wheelchair or a mobility device, to incentivize them to have an accessible van or a vehicle to pick them up. That's number one. My other major concern is, on the other thing I'm pleased with, is some of the people who came who are interested were previous Metro Access providers who are interested in like Battles and Diamond to possibly look at this, so that's good. We see some seasoned, experienced people, but I do have a concern about one possible provider that's putting in a possible pitch, Regency Taxi. The fact that they disavowed them or they were not picked to be back on Metro Access service, and I have issues with them in terms of safety concerns, as I've saw them personally or heard from customers, and I'm just putting that out there. But not just that, them. There were other issues. I think maybe Mr. Kent can, if he can discuss that disallowed them from being part of Metro Access service on this next door when the contract changed. I was quite surprised to see them there.
Mr. Chair, let me answer you this way. When we put out a solicitation,
well, I know it's open to everyone.
Well, it is open to everyone, but if Metro chose to debar an organization from participating, you know, that's a pretty serious infraction. You have to do something pretty bad to be debarred or restricted from submitting a proposal for a Metro solicitation. There has to be some overt wrongdoing, and there were no firms that were debarred from participating in Abilities Ride, regardless of, you know, past service to WMATA.
Mm-hmm.
So it didn't really go that far for any firm. I think that, you know, with most of our solicitations for service, there is an element in the evaluation criteria for past performance.
Mm-hmm. We look at that very seriously with that particular company.
And because of the fact, of course, you know that I can't make comments about individual companies,
well,
but I'll just say this much, that Now that the solicitation is on our website, it's available for everyone's examination. And I would really encourage all of you, if you have not looked at it yet, to at your convenience, take some time and go through it. Because, you know, even if you weren't at the pre-bid conference, you can examine this document and see very clearly not only what the requirements are, which I know were of interest, very, you know, great interest to this committee, but also the manner in which the proposals will be evaluated is also described in the RFP. So, I mean, all that's kind of laid out, but I really do think Charlie gave an excellent summation of what happened at the pre-bid conference, and I agree, too. I think Carol Tyson always does a good job as an advocate, you know, coming forward and raising the points that have been of interest to the community. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Denise, followed by Phil.
I was glad to see a lot of people interested in the RFP, and definitely some past companies that we've used who are familiar with Metro Access riders and customers. I still do not understand, and maybe you all can help me understand. A customer calls or uses their app to get the transportation. They want a ride. They pay $5. But at that time, they're told how much their ride is going to be. And let's say the customer is told it's going to be $30. So that person needs $15. What I don't understand is, say the cab comes or Lyft or whoever comes, and it really takes 30 minutes if nothing happens, or it costs $30, but there's an accident, or there's a fire, or whatever, and it takes 2 hours to get that person there. It's still only going the 9 miles that they were charged. Do they have to pay additional because it took 2 hours? Who pays that in between thin line costs? Because DC is a flat $5, but this is based on, is it on a meter? Or is it on
miles? It's based on, and the thing is, I'm gonna preface my answer with the fact that vendors who are interested in this proposal are supposed to submit all of these questions to procurement for an official answer. So nothing that I tell you is more than my opinion. If you really want the official answer, you got to send an email to the address that Mr. Crawford cited earlier. But what I will tell you is that my understanding is that once we quote a time to a customer for Metro Access, or we quote a fare, we don't change it. And I did not get the impression that Abilities Ride was meant to be any different. That you make a reservation, you get a quote, that's your fare, mm-hmm. and that's your time. I didn't see anything in any of the descriptions that would suggest that it would change in any way once that quote's been given. But if it is a question that you'd like an official answer to, then it has to be sent in.
Yeah, because taxis are on meters, but, you know, I'm just asking.
But this is a contract, so once the rates are set, then you know, that's the structure, and then it's just trip by trip. People use the service, and they get an individualized quote for each trip they make.
Okay, and I did ask this question at the meeting. There, if you have 100 vehicles available, in the contract, it doesn't say that a percentage or a number of wheelchair accessible vehicles are required. I'm just using 100. So there's nowhere that says that at least 20% or 25% need to be wheelchair accessible. Is that correct?
Yeah, I've been watching a lot of TV recently.
Excuse me?
I've been watching a lot of TV recently, and I think this is the part where I say that I and my opponent have two different visions for America. Is that... thereby not answering your question directly? No, I'm just kidding. There are two ways to answer your question, Ms. Rush. One is to write to J.W. Pimpion at WMATA.com, or the other is for us to hire you in the Department of Procurement, which is a slightly longer process, but one that you may find rewarding. So
nobody thinks that's a valid question.
It's not that it isn't a valid question. It's just I can't answer it.
I can't answer it.
No, ma'am.
Well, that went through the whole thing Friday. No question. Everybody, I guess it was just for everybody to hear what questions that other people may have, because
Some questions were answered, but I'll tell you the truth, there's a reason for that. I mean, when we did the pre-bid conference, there are a few things we talked to this committee about. We said, first of all, we want to make sure we have that meeting so that the interested vendors can see the community's role and interest in the service. So when they came, they saw you, Ms. Rush, they saw Mr. Semelfort, Mr. Crawford, Mr. Sheehan, and you all were recognized during the conference, so the vendors got to see that. But we answered as many questions as we felt were simple and straightforward, but some of them, you know, if they required any length or any further verification, what we told everyone is that it would come back in writing, and that's the more common way that it's done.
Okay. I'll make a proposal that the AAC, the members that are here, or we send to me or someone the questions, and then we have a list of questions that the AAC committee would like answered. Can I get anybody?
I guess is there any discussion?
Yes.
Question is that I have not paid all the AAC members in the September, so it should go to the regular AAC.
Well, we can start with this and have to report at the November meeting.
We don't have much time. We've got to have the questions in by the 20th. That's this week. I mean, if you don't want
to... We need to amend it to the day.
Mr. Chair.
Yes. Charlie.
One of the things it said in the RFP was, last year there were 700 and some odd thousand non-WEV wheelchair accessible vehicle trips, and there were 900 and something thousand altogether. So the difference between the 7 whatever and the 9 whatever equals a percentage of the total.
Mm-hmm.
And that percentage could be inferred to equal what one would expect if the same levels of utilization were to exist in the future as in the past. So to that extent, there was an acknowledgement of a need for wheelchair accessible vehicles to satisfy the demand. But since you can't necessarily put a hard number on the demand, because that's always subject to flexibility, I guess the best thing they could do was what I saw in the RFP. Now, if we want to go from there, we can certainly ask the question of Mr. Campion, if the historical pattern was 750,000 for non-wheelchair utilization and 200,000 or whatever for wheelchair users, then would that amount of availability of wheelchair accessible vehicles have to be maintained at, during the process of a person's operating this contract in order to assure that people get their ride? I mean, I think that would be a reasonable question to ask.
All right, so what is the deadline for these questions? What is the exact date?
The 20th.
The 20th of this month? Yeah, of October. Oh, we're at the 17th, so
yeah.
I would need, let's see, okay, if this is done through me, everyone sends it and just emails everyone. I would need to get this like tomorrow so that I can have this all formatted and try to get it out by the 19th.
That's true. I mean,
so I would need,
if you have questions, would you please send them to Paul
tonight
or tomorrow, no later than
tomorrow, no later. Well, we have people not here, so tomorrow, no later than noon. Does that sound reasonable? That way I can shoot something to y'all by tomorrow night. This is the list of final questions. Can y'all, you know, give me some feedback? Maybe by noon on, let's see, 17, 18, by the 19th. We're trying to get this out by noon on the 19th by email.
Did you want it in business? I'm discussing.
Is what?
Mr. Dr. Banerjee is asking if Abilities Ride will put Metro Access out of business.
No, it will not. I can answer that resoundingly. It is a 1688 paratransit.
Committee has spoken.
So,
no, we're not giving the vehicles to them. No, this is, they are expected to provide vehicles for this service. That I can answer because it's not about the proposal so much as it is about what we're doing with the Metro Access fleet, which is that we're going to keep it. And we're going to continue to use it for Metro Access. Now, I think, you know, over time, there is a desire for us to redistribute the market share of some of this work. There are other ways to get around other than Metro Access. We are not suggesting that we want to work until there is no Metro Access. What we're trying to say is that all of you who've ridden the service over the years know what its limitations are. So Metro Access has to stay and be an option permanently per the ADA. But if alongside it there are other choices that people could make themselves available to that work better for them, then Metro Access is one option. Abilities Ride can be another option. Transport DC, yay. Heidi, yay. can be another option. And there are more. But I think that's really the message we're trying to put out there. One of the things we struggle with when we tell the story to Congress and just to the jurisdictions in general is that a long time ago somebody said, well, isn't Metro supposed to do all the transporting of everybody for everything? And it's like, well, wait a second. If some of the transporting that we do in this region is for people with disabilities who need not only transportation, but some extra care, that's different. And Metro has, you know, an ability to handle that work to a point, but some human service agencies do their own transporting. And there's some vocational centers, some like the Medicaid program has its own transportation. There are a number of different ways to get around. And the point that we're trying to make is, yes, it is our job to do transportation. But transportation for people with disabilities can take lots of different forms. Sometimes it's combined with human services. Sometimes it's strictly public transit. Sometimes it's a hybrid of the two. But the thing is, we would do a better job if we combined our resources rather than everybody saying, well, let Metro do it. And not come to the table and share. And I think that's what Abilities Ride attempts to do. It's our first step of extending our hand to the private sector to say that you can come in and you can make a contribution, great, but we're not going to stop there. We're also going to work with human service agencies, which actually I think is one of that's the next presentation item today. So I'll stop there.
We have a motion on the floor. Can I make a friendly amendment? Because we do need to close this and go to a presentation, then customer comment. So, Denise, since it's your motion, can I amend and basically to what I said in terms of everyone gets their questions to me by noon. Just copy everyone. I put it together for a final send out to make sure it's okay by tomorrow evening from this meeting, so that it can go out by noon on the 19th before the 20th. Is that a friendly amendment with you?
Yes.
All right. So let's put the motion to the floor here. All those in favor for what I just... does someone second? Do I need a second?
No.
Second. All those in... Also, all those in favor of this motion of sending the questions to me by noon tomorrow, I massage and put them in the format, send it back to everyone for final comment, which would be, 17th, 18th, by the 19th, by noon, so I can get this out by that afternoon.
Aye.
Aye. Nays. Abstentions. Motion carries. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman,
very
quickly.
So Phil and then Charlie, and then we're closing this subject. We can go back to Cheryl.
Yeah, my question is if Mr. Kent will pay attention. Comes from Patrick, who did attend the meeting on Friday. And the question comes from there being multiple vendors that may get the contract. And so depending upon how you contact them, because the options are telephone or smartphone or smoke signal or whatever, there's no central location. So how does a customer know who to call or who to contact? If the WAVE vehicles are available across all three vendors, do they call one, and if there's none available, they then call the second, they then call the third? Also, are the fares going to be the same amongst all vendors for the same trip, since some vendors have surge pricing and some have distance meters and time meters? If so, will they know what the fare is when they get on and have to pay the cash up front? Or will they get a bill later, or will we take it off their Smart Trip card, or do they have to have an account like a pay account we have with Metro Access? So those are all questions with multiple vendors and no central location. Who's going to centralize things and make things...
I want to take Charlie's question, ask your question, then Mr. Kent can answer all of them, and then Tappan, can you put I'll put you down for customer service, but we got to get to the next presentations.
Mr. Chairman, I don't have a question.
Okay.
I just have a comment.
Okay. Can I put you on for customer comment so you have time to do that?
Well, it's only a 10-second comment.
Yeah, but...
I just want to say that my experience with RFPs is fairly extensive, and it's a lot of times you get lost not seeing the forest for the trees. But on the whole, after reading the entire RFP, I was very impressed.
Thank you. Go ahead, Mr. Kent.
Well, high praise from Mr. Crawford. Thank you. We appreciate that. We took a lot of time on it. Much to my disappointment, I cannot answer any of Dr. Posner's questions because Mr. Sheehan's questions, as articulated by Dr. Posner, eloquently as always, because some of them, are dependent upon the way the awards are made, which is dependent upon who proposes and what they propose. So I think, and I would suggest that there is nothing wrong with the AAC. If you're going to submit questions, you can also submit comments. We will read all the feedback that you send in. So if you send in a comment and say, like Mr. Crawford did, I don't have a question, but I have a comment. If it's more public input into what we're doing, you know, whether you do it through that process or you just tell us here, we're still listening to you. You know, it's going to be a while. It's going to be, you know, a couple of months of going through receiving proposals and, you know, a team evaluating them before we finally get to an award. But, you know, some of the things that Phil raised, you know, like, well, you know, if there are multiple awards, would there be different fares? Would there be different numbers? You know, how intuitive, I think, would it be to the customer on how to make a choice between more than one of them in order to use the service? This, I would encourage you to put that in your questions to our procurement group. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right, thank you.
Now, Mr. Chair, there was one other thing I wanted to add. You know, this was a point of order that we had not raised in the other committee meetings. But, you know, I've observed that there have been a few times where members of the committee wanted to make comments, and there's a public comment period, but there was no place on the agenda, I guess, for committee members to comment. And I think that happened when we stopped putting new business on the agenda.
The problem is time, and we want to end on time.
Well, I understand.
So that's why I just put them in the public comments. They can say what they want to say.
Well, I was just going to suggest to you that if you like, we can put new business on after public comment if you want to make sure that the public comment period is fully accommodated. But the committee members are supposed to have some designated part of the committee to register their opinions as committee members as compared to public comment, which has the clock and, you know, is a slightly different procedure. So I was raising that for your consideration for here and the other groups.
We could do that, but that means we would have to readjust other agenda items.
Your prerogative.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mm-hmm.
All right. Thank you. With no further ado, I guess we can go back to Cheryl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe we have the images available up on the screen. Oh, yes.
We
do. Yes. And so, to review, the top image is the current conditional eligibility card, the white card, the name, picture, logo. The card in the middle will be the new card that is on the Smart Trip platform. We wanted to make sure that it looked different enough that we would know that this was the new Smart Trip card, but that we wanted to also keep with the theme and the look and the color scheme of Metro and Metro Access. And the bottom card is the PCA card. And so does anyone have any questions about those cards?
Mr. Chair, if I could just interject, you know, Cheryl and the team and our representative from the Office of the Treasurer was here earlier, but when she found out that we'd already spoken about this, she left. Tracy Foster, we wanted to recognize her. But just for those of you who can't see what these cards look like, the PCA card looks like the standard Smart Trip card, which has, you know, an illustration of Washington, D.C. with a couple of trains, the Washington Monument, the Capitol, you know, a pillar. It has the Metro M at the bottom of it and the word Smart Trip along the bottom. And on the left side of the card, the left edge has a margin on it that's white with the letters PCA in black. And that's the card that you tap within 90 seconds of the card that the Metro Access customer uses. So just above that is the new card that we are issuing to the customer. And this card is also a Smart Trip card, but this one looks like the color scheme of the vans, the Metro Access vans, where from the upper left to the lower right, there is a red curved border with the Metro Access logo just underneath the photograph of the Metro Access customer. And it has the customer's name, ID number, and expiration date written in black with a sort of gray-silver background. And the Metro logo and the Smart Trip logos are featured in the upper right. So this card and the PCA card are both smart trip cards that when you go to a metro bus or a metro rail fare target and you tap it, it's going to let you through and provide the autonomous access. And again, I know that the community has been waiting for this for a long time. We're very pleased to be able to offer this. It took us a while, took Metro a little while to get to a place where we would be able to do this. But the truth of the matter is that, you know, in all of our discussions with you about places in the system where it was difficult to get into the station without the assistance of the station manager, a big motivation for Metro doing it at this particular time is because as Metro Access customers will increasingly not have to ask for assistance from station managers to use the rail system. Hopefully this will give them much more time to focus on their other safety-related duties in the rail stations. So we think that that is a win-win for all customers. You know, and obviously the other piece being that you're not going to be delayed as you go into the system just because there is not someone there to look at your card and verify that you're eligible for the benefit. Now, I'm going to be a little greedy here and tell you that we also appreciate the fact that when people ask us how many people with disabilities use our rail system, that we'll have raw numbers as people go through. Every time you use these cards, it's going to tally, that a person with a disability used the system. And, you know, we think that really, in the long run, is going to continue to make the argument about why it's so important that all of our systems are fully accessible. So, as Ms. O'Connick stated, when these new cards are issued, then the old ones would no longer, we don't want you to use those anymore. When you get the new card, it should arrive in the mail ready to use. Correct, Ms. O'Connick?
Yes, sir, that is correct.
All right, so you take it out and it's your Christmas present early, and we say happy riding to you on bus and rail. So hopefully this is good news for everybody. Thank you.
All right, Phil, as it relates to this presentation.
Just a quick question, being the disability committee, will these cards have raised lettering or braille for the blind customers?
They do not, but the Office of Eligibility does have a brailler, and we are happy to put the expiration date. We've done that plenty of times. If it's requested, we'll be glad to do that.
Yeah, I'm thinking mainly for their ID numbers and the expiration date, that's critical, and also PCA, so they can tell the difference which is their card, which is the PCA card. Those are really important things.
Oliver?
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, first of all, can you hear me? First of all, I have to say thank you very much. This is really great news. And as you said, Mr. Kent, we were waiting for this achievement. So I'm very pleased to see this. My question is related to any person who has, and I have to go by these colors because that is the current colors that we have right now. Any person, any rider, Metro Access rider that has the white car will have the Smart Trip card plus the PCA Smart Trip card.
Correct.
And the person or the rider who has the blue card right now, what would be their status?
This would
be only for Metro Access riders, no Metro Rail and Bus.
That is correct.
Okay, thank you.
Anyone else?
Yes, and if I could just add, though, Elver, that if you are a customer that has the blue card, you know, this is something, we talked with the board about this 5 years ago when we established the policy about who gets the free ride. It means that during the eligibility process, that the customer came in and either told us, or the doctor's information told us, or the functional assessment told us, that they are not capable of using bus or rail safely at all. And so that is why they would receive the blue card. That's really more the reason why we issue that. If a customer's situation changes, and they say, gosh, you know, somebody is going to travel with me, or my condition changed or improved. If a blue card holder wants to come to the eligibility office and say, you know, my situation is different now, that you can reapply through the eligibility process for the white card if you need to do that. But the thing that you have to recognize, though, is that, you know, that's the entire process again. And, you know, I think it's something that's important that we are concerned for the blue card holders, that, you know, there are people out there who say, well, you know, this free ride benefit is really fantastic, but if you have a really profound disability and we visit with you in the assessment center and the whole point of you using Metro Access is for your safety, then, you know, it really is a very important decision there. If a customer says, you know, I want to venture out on the fixed route system, you know, obviously that's their right, but they're coming to us with a doctor's description of their condition, and they're going through an assessment where we are determining, the main thing we're trying to determine is yes or no, are they eligible for Metro Access? Not so much trying to distinguish how eligible they are for bus and rail, because everyone is eligible for bus and rail. But the real issue is, if there is a safety issue that a customer would have on bus and rail, and we give them the blue card so that they can always have Metro Access without any kind of restriction, they have to think very, very carefully about whether or not they would want to, you know, ask to change that status because of the fact that there may be some very real barriers for them in the fixed route system, which is why paratransit is there in the first place. So we really hope that actually that the committee will support us on that, you know, that when we put out that blue card, that's one of the reasons that why we do that.
Quick question. For our Metro Access, we have EasyPay account. For the Smart Trip card, we use the separate Smart Trip online. The reason I say that is I think Elmer got caught at one point. There are some of the transit systems in the area that don't accept the free ride for Metro Access. I think something in Fairfax County doesn't do that, or one of those. And they needed a Smart Trip card, and we didn't have Smart Trip cards. I think it was you, Elmer.
Yes, it was.
So
it was
this way, we could actually load money onto the Smart Trip card as a Smart Trip card, and then use it as such.
That is correct. You'll be able to use it in all of the jurisdictional partners as a Smart Trip, and if they do not accept the free ride benefit for Metro Access customers, you would pay the fare or half fare. Each jurisdiction is different. We've been working with them to make sure we have applied their rules to the card.
And parking too?
Parking is not free, but you can use the card to pay for parking.
But you can load value.
That is correct. You can set it up for auto reload and to load it for parking and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Mr. Kent, I would like to do follow-up about the eligibility regarding the blue card. So if you please, after the meeting, we can talk a little bit, please.
By all means.
Thank you, sir.
Mm-hmm. Now, I thought that you went through. All right, travel coordination with centers. Go ahead. The next piece.
So, William Proctor, Metro Access. So, what we were interested in doing was to speak with the members here to see exactly how we can work together as far as serving the community, I mean the centers, interacting with the staff there, as well as meeting the needs of the customers as it relates to accommodating them. And just working out a plan so that everybody's satisfied. There are some concerns as it relates to accommodating customers and on time while they're on the van and things such as that. So that's what we want to engage everyone as far as their concerns and work towards a solution as far as.
So are you talking about places like the Arc or?
Yes. So we really wanted to, as Mr. Parker pointed out, just come to the committee to hear some of your maybe suggestions or recommendations as it relates to servicing these centers. Because as Mr. Proctor pointed out, sometimes we get requests either from passengers or people at the centers themselves relative to providing services that kind of are outside of the scope of our charter as Metro Access. So for instance, sometimes our vehicles will pick up a customer and transport them to the center, but arriving maybe before the center opens. Then we're put in a situation of obviously looking out for the safety of that customer as to whether we can drop off that customer and that customer be okay and be able to wait until that center opens, or in more cases than not, put in a situation where we find that we have to have our drivers wait with the customer because there is a safety concern about leaving them by themselves until the center opens, which puts pressure on the rest of the route and the other customers that are also in need of our services.
Any suggestions, committee members? Because I do want to get
Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
If I could just add something.
Yep.
One of the reasons why we want to talk with you about this, about social service centers, is because, as I mentioned earlier about Abilities Ride, there are different kinds of need out there for specialized transportation. Some of it is just simply take me from A to B. Some of it is let me participate in a program. Some of it is, you know, parent sends child out of the house and says, would you get on this nice paratransit vehicle, and they're going to take care of you until your program starts. Now, over the years, I've had some interesting experiences, and I know Darnice remembers from a long time ago when we were talking about proving whether or not Metro Access met its performance requirements. And one of the things that they ask us to do is, okay, make sure that you obviously deliver a respectable level of on-time performance and also a comparable ride time on paratransit to fixed route. And then you've got customers who called us up and said, well, you're getting my child to the center too early. Now, there are other customers that are going to say, hallelujah, you know what? They got me 5 miles away in 15 minutes, and I love it, and that's the kind of service I want. And if we did that for the non-human service center customers, they'd be thrilled. This is direct transportation. It was timely. It was efficient. But this parent says, well, I have to leave at 7 o'clock for work. And the center doesn't open up until 8 o'clock, so I'm okay if my child socializes on the van for a little while until the van makes its way to the center. If the FTA comes in and looks at us, they're going to say, really, well, so this 5-mile trip took an hour? And the parent's happy. The child is probably okay, probably talking to their friends and, you know, not too concerned about it. But they're saying it's not comparable to other trips that we operate with Metro Access. So we wanted to start this conversation with you basically to let you know that one of the things we are doing is we are reaching out to these centers and we're talking with them about how we can work together better.
because some of those centers have their own transportation services that when they run out of money, they park their vehicles or they sell them and they say, you know what, I could run this vehicle, I could have a travel coordinator to plan how I go pick everybody up, or I could sell the vehicle and pay $3.20 on Metro Access each way and we're done. And we're not done, okay? Because what ends up happening is the trip comes onto our service, and now we have Metro Access customers with differing expectations of what the service is supposed to do. So part of what we want to do, I mean, and we already attempt to do this to some degree with our call center operator. I see Mr. Peterson and Mr. Gray with us this evening from MV Transportation. They are very familiar with this type of travel requirement, but they have to work to schedule those trips along with all of the other Metro Access customers who may be using the service to get to work. They may be using it to go to doctor's appointments or other events where they don't want to fool around. They want to get to their destination directly, and they don't want to have the circuitous route or the delayed arrival. So we have an interesting scheduling challenge in front of us, and what we really simply wanted to say to all of you, there were two things Mr. Proctor and Ms. Anderson wanted to get. And one was, if you can provide any insight that you have observed in riding Metro Access and how these centers are served, how the customers who are going to those centers have affected trips that you've been on, or just, you know, anything of interest you've seen with those customers where you really think we could do a better job or maybe we're missing something. And the other thing that we wanted to do is to say, we have typically not asked this committee for specific advice on how to work with these organizations, because we usually talk to you as experts on using Metro and its various services, or simply advising us on the nature of the different types of disabilities that you all may represent. Now we want to take a little step further and say, to the extent that you can advise us on programs that people with disabilities participate in that are operated by the human services sector, to the extent that you have the ability to advise us on those relationships, we are going to start going and talking with them. And if any of you would be interested in helping us do that or give us, you know, advice, if you want to participate, however you want to do that, we wanted to give this committee an opportunity to do that. So, Mr. Chair, I hope that helps to clarify what Allison and William are asking you to do.
All right. So we're going to take people's comments, but do keep in mind it is about 5:30. We have customers here for customer comment period. So I'm trying to keep this at 10 minutes. So please make your comments as concise as possible so I can get through the rest of these customers who come to the meeting so they can have their voice heard during customer comment period. So with that, I see Marissa, followed by Elver, Denise, and I see, oh, Heidi, can you address it during your public comment period since you're on the list already?
Yes.
Hi.
Please.
Something else. So I'll have to speak to her later.
Okay. So I can get everyone here out in a timely manner. So let's begin with Marissa. Concise as possible, please.
One day, you guys can hear the shortest IQ to
up on that.
Thank you. Albert?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering about the subscription trip, how this will fit into this sequence, because we have the house of the family, we have Metro Access Transportation, and we have the center of the program that the person is going to go to. And yes, evidently when the person gets there at 8:40, when it's supposed to be 8:45, they will not receive the person, and the person must wait, so et cetera, et cetera. My question is related with the subscription trip, because we do the plan for a month, and they have these already scheduled every day, but again, there is no there is no consistency in terms of the arrival time to the program, but the pickup will be different from the house. So I'm just wondering about how the subscription trips will be involved and if it will be adjusted in terms of changes with this.
Actually, I'm going to have Mr. Gray with MV Transportation come up to talk about that just for a minute.
Good evening. So our subscriptions department, how we do the trips to our centers is we get the subscription information from the passengers or the passenger's family, and then we start building a template around that. We try to look for two or three or up to four passengers going to the same center from the same geographic area at the same time. Now, the variables that you can have are some mornings you can have absolutely fantastic traffic and you are there early. And other mornings, you might get a traffic delay, or you might have one of the passengers on that route that is slightly delayed. And that trip, instead of being there at 8:30 or 8:45, might be there at 8:50 or 8:55. So you try to build in a little bit of a variable with it, with each center. Now, as we've learned over the years, a lot of the centers have their own different standards for it. What our subscriptions team has tried to do is reach out to the centers and find out exactly when do you open, and then talk again with the families to see if we can adjust those times. Because we don't want the families there too early, because it's no good for someone to have to wait a half hour. The other thing we try to do as well is when the driver does arrive and after we've talked to the center, is to make sure we communicate with the staff and make sure they realize too when they can accept the passengers to please help us.
Thank you.
Thank you. Darnice?
My suggestion is work with the Department of Disability Services and most of the area vendors or stakeholders and contractors within the district government, and we have quarterly service provider fairs where vendors from most of these agencies come in and talk about their program, and it would be a good idea to coordinate to have Metro Access come in. Then you could speak about that and meet contact people, and you would then be able to set your schedule. That's about the only thing I can suggest.
No, I appreciate that, and I think there is opportunity to partner quite a bit more with the key players at the center just to try to coordinate better these new trips.
So I'll get you some names and times.
All right, thank you.
Thank you so much. I'm going to begin with customer comment period. There's no other comments on this topic. Yes, go ahead.
Just a quick thing I'd like to ask Mr. Gray to expound upon is beyond the scheduling function of subscription as we're talking about, what actually happens on the day of service when the driver gets there? We do have differences where it becomes even an issue performing door-to-door appropriately, right? Because we have policies on door-to-door where the driver cannot go, the operator cannot go beyond the second vestibule, and this is not something that's very consistent across the board with the certain centers. So Mr. Bush raises a very important issue, because in that case, the poor driver's left trying to figure out what's happening, right? I want to get to the customer, to the right place, drop them off safely, and move on to my next trip. But whereas a different center sees this as a very different, you know, requirement, it becomes an issue. So I'd like Mr. Gray to expound upon that a little.
Oh, absolutely. Some of the centers over the years have been absolutely fantastic with us, partnering with us, telling us what they need, and vice versa. We have had, though, in the past, occasions where staff members in some of the locations will try to get the drivers to enter the building with the passenger and then take them down elevators, take them down different hallways, try to pick them up in different rooms, and this is not something we're geared towards. And we find about every 4 to 6 months, we really have to get in communication again with the directors or send out a road supervisor. So have a road supervisor be there, or Mr. Hayford and the Metro Access team to go talk to the center and say, listen, this isn't really what we do. We do door-to-door service, but we don't go inside, and we don't help passengers get ready inside the building, and we're not doing those kind of physical checks for passengers.
Thank you. All right. We're going to go with customer comment. If someone brings the mic, the first person on the list is Heidi Case. For all customers, 3 minutes.
Hi. So I think a very timely thing that's happening, and people, advocates, disability advocates across the country have been working on this. In Chicago, they are filing suit against Uber for their attempts at an alternative to paratransit. Access Living is the name of the organization. And I think it's absolutely perfect timing for Metro, because it may be able to give them some ability to further enforce the kind of requirements that we're looking for. Our organization, Project Action, has signed on to their letter. But just to give you an example, in Chicago, over 4 years, where Uber was providing hundreds of thousands of paratransit trips, they only provided 14 wheelchair trips for the entire 4 years. Because why? They don't have the vehicles. So this is their proof that there's discrimination. So I just wanted to make people aware that that is happening, and that, you know, that advocates are looking for equity from Metro, as you all are too. And when it comes to questions, Mr. Kent, can anyone submit questions, even if they were not in attendance?
Yes.
Okay, good. Then I have a minute left. The place I'd like to talk to you all about is NRH. And they have an ever-increasing exercise and fitness program that they're offering free to people with disabilities outside of their regular hours. So they're using the gym, the PT rooms, all of those machines, and offering gym hours on Saturdays and Tuesday nights. Now, on Thursday nights, they have boxing class, and they have just very recently, in the last month, started Wednesday night yoga classes. So what's happening, these are what I get the most calls about. Suddenly, the class is over, and 15 people are waiting for Metro Access. We've had a case where the wrong passenger, the driver couldn't report the name, and they called, and they said, oh, no, you're on the van with so-and-so. And she's like, no, I'm not. But I think there's a real ability to better coordinate, and if you, even if you're just aware of what those hours are and things. So that would be my suggestion.
Thank you very much for that information. We'll certainly follow up. Thank you.
All right. Next person on the list is Barbara Jackson. 3 minutes.
Good evening. I'm Barbara Jackson. I work for TransDev. I am an operator, and I have transported some of the people in this room. I have concerns of protection for the operator. We had an operator that was attacked on Saturday. She wasn't robbed, but she was beat up pretty badly. So who protects the operator? It was not a passenger, from my understanding. So, you know, we want protection. You know, we go out here, we have no protection. I don't know if Metro Police or DC Police was around the area today when that, at the same place that the attack occurred. But we need protection. You know, so that's my major concern. And my other concern is about the cost. Sometimes you guys may pay $3.50 going, then you may pay $6 going back home. And I don't understand why the cost fluctuates when you're going from the same location back to the same location. And it may not even be rush hour. You may go at 10 in the morning, you may come back at 2 in the afternoon. So, you know, there needs to be some type of accountability for our customers' sake. They're living on fixed incomes. And they ask me all the time, why is this happening? I have no answers. So we need accountability from WMATA, from MB and TransDev and First Transit. You guys really have to explain to the customers because the drivers don't know. I tell them all I do is go pick you up, take you where you have to go safely. That's my number one job, is to get you where you're going safely.
Thank you. Mr. Kent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to ask Mr. Conrad Marshall, who's TransDev's general manager, if he'd like to respond.
Yes, I'd love to. Obviously, as a general manager at TransDev, and I'm sure my other general managers that are sitting back here with me, we all are concerned about not just the passenger safety, but we care dearly about our operators. We do partner with Metro Transit Police, and matter of fact, we have them visiting our facilities on a recurring basis just to go over certain things. And they were at our facility about 2 months ago, and had an opportunity to meet with a lot of operators. Operators asked them questions about exactly what Ms. Jackson spoke about, safety, and what they can do if they run into situations while they're out on the road transporting our valued customers. And obviously, we'll continue to address issues as they come, and I am aware of the issue that happened yesterday. Matter of fact, I was speaking with the young lady today. She came to see me. So we're taking care of her. And any help she needs to get past the incident that occurred, obviously we give to her, and we'll give to any operator.
Mr. Marshall, just wanted to ask you, was this involving a Metro Access customer or just someone from the public?
It wasn't a customer. This one was okay. Just someone from general public.
Sure, because I do want to address what Ms. Jackson said as far as accountability of WMATA. You know, if a customer, a registered Metro Access customer, were to become violent on a vehicle, there is a policy, a direct threat policy about that WMATA's role is to enforce that. We don't ask our contractors to go contact the customer to tell them, you know, you violated a rule. WMATA does that directly. And so, you know, all that really needs to happen is that operators need to hopefully they're going to report the incident to their own management, and then in turn, you know, the contractor management lets Metro know, and Metro intercedes where the customer is concerned. Now, if it's a member of the general public, you know, I am happy to say, and I really appreciate Mr. Marshall citing the visit of the recent visits of Metro Transit Police to his facility and others. You know, there was a time earlier on in my tenure here where I had to explain to the police that Metro Access was a part of Metro. Because some of them would look at the van and say, well, that's aren't those the contractors? That seems like some other service. It's like, no, that's one of the reasons why the vehicles have the Metro M on them, because I wanted to be able to point to it and say, that says Metro. You know, so that means that Metro needs to support that service. And, you know, the transit police are very attentive to that, and I think that's important. Now, you all, I don't know how much the certainly this committee is about metro access, but AAC also has a bus rail subcommittee, and I don't know how much you've gotten into assaults on operators on bus and on bus and rail, particularly on bus. It's been a big problem on metro bus, to the point that metro is putting shields in the metro buses to protect the operators, and the operators like talking to the customers, so a lot of them were hesitant to use these shields. But you know, I think after a while, you know, I mean, if it was happening often enough, you know, some operators, you know, we've made it mandatory now that the operators, you know, are to use these shields because we're trying to protect the metro employees. We have not studied this issue on metro access in any detail, but I will say this much: we have incident reports on all of them, and I just would say to the contractors who are here this evening and also to my team that you know, I think it's reasonable for us to study this issue and just kind of see, you know, where the problems are occurring, and if there's anything more that we can do. I think that's a reasonable thing for us to look into. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Next person on the list is Francine White. 3 minutes.
Recently, I had made arrangements to visit the new museum, the National Museum of African American History and Culture, and I definitely did my homework before going down there. I wanted to know exactly where I needed to be dropped off and picked up. And they told me to go to 1400 Constitution Avenue, and they said that there would be signage, a handicap signage, in front of the building. Going down on the trip, I had no problems, because I definitely secured when my pickup time was going to be, the confirmation numbers on the time going and also on the time coming back. I waited in terms of being picked up, and it was way beyond the pickup time. So I had called Where's My Ride. When I called, they had no record of my return trip. So naturally, I was a little bit concerned about it. So I wasn't going to go into a discussion with the person I talked to on the phone, so I immediately talked to the supervisor, and he straightened the issue out for me, and I was able to get picked up like about a half an hour after that. But my concern is, why should I have to revalidate or reschedule a trip? Because that should not have even happened. My other issue is, this is just a recommendation. There are a lot of people who are utilizing the paratransit service, you know, to go to the museum. But in terms of the drop-off and the pickup point, it's not really very safe. One thing, the signage is right there where they keep the food trucks. So you have to negotiate your way past the food truck to get on the sidewalk. And then when you're trying to get picked up, you have to basically reverse that process and inhale down the Metro Access van to get picked up. Now, I don't normally travel with a PCA. I only do it when due to like location or depending upon how I feel. But that day, I am so glad I had a PCA with me because my safety was definitely compromised. So I'm just going to suggest that maybe someone from customer service speak with the customer service folks at the museum and try to arrange a different pickup and drop-off point for people utilizing paratransit.
Thank you.
Thank you, and first off, I'd like to apologize. Obviously, if you booked a trip going down to the museum, you have to have a trip coming back home. If I can sit down with you after the meeting, I'd like to get the details for your trip and find out exactly what happened. I do know that 14th and Constitution is where we were set up after the initial opening. I believe it was 17th and Constitution during the opening night and the opening weekend that we were set up with a specific spot for Metro Access. But again, we'd like to follow up and see where there is possibly a better spot for pickup and drop off for the museum.
All right, thank you. You didn't want to vote?
Okay. I don't have any further comments.
Okay, Bill Orleans is next. 3 minutes.
I regret that I was late and missed what was apparently an amended agenda discussion of abilities ride. When I got here, I didn't see it on the agenda. So I surmise that was maybe a recitation by Mr. Kent of what took place Friday. With regard to that activity and Mr. Benji's question, which I did hear, is this the end of Rabada's access services? And Mr. Kent's answer. I'd like to suggest that if they're successful in pushing off more and more paratransit onto more and more contractors, notwithstanding the fact that much of the cost will be the burden of the rider and not Ramada, where there's a maximum, in the long run, they'll have less of a need for as many vehicles and drivers, the vehicles that they own and drivers that they contract for through the various contractors. And in the long run, Pat, I would suggest that your question has merit. There will be, if not the end, I mean, obviously they're going to have to meet the federal requirements, but Metro Access service will be significantly reduced. With regard to what also what occurred on Friday, there was a question asked, and I don't know if this might have been discussed earlier. I'm told the answers will be provided in writing, which I hope all members of the AAC will see. It's a simple question. Has Ramada done a Title VI analysis about this entire abilities-wide proposal? It was unclear by the answer given Friday as to whether or not they have. If they have not, I'm inclined to believe they should have done so, or should do so at this point. But if there has been done one, why hasn't it been shared with people interested in that question? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Orleans, just so you know, the recitation of what happened on Friday was much more capably provided by Charlie Crawford, a member of this committee, and I think he did a good job covering the events. But I will give you this answer to your question about Title VI. Again, all the official answers will come in writing following the receipt of questions this week, but it is my opinion that a Title VI analysis was not required and therefore not done. In fact, I mean, I know that a Title VI analysis was not done, and it is my opinion that it was not done because we did not believe that it was required. That is something that I'm going to verify, but that's my understanding of the issue. In the meantime, we did talk about the process for submitting questions. I don't know if you heard that part of the, but you were at the conference, so I know you're familiar with that. But the committee is going to be submitting its own questions. So if there are any further contributions that you'd like to make, I'm sure the chair would be happy to include them. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Next is Tappan. 3 minutes.
Well, I think, thank you for clarifying my question to Mr. Christian. Yes. I rejoice now, you're right. My question is really the price of the Metro Access we're going with the Ability Rider. If it's a $20 fare, Metro Access pays $15 and customer will pay $5. Now if it's $30 fare, then Metro Access pays $15 and customer pays $15. So that means you take the percentage. $15, $20, and $5 is about 25-75% sharing. But $30, if I pay $15, is almost 50-50% sharing. So why it was not based on percentage rather than that we are limit $15, you might get $100, doesn't matter, you pay all over $100. Now in Virginia, as the chairman of the Disability Services Board, we have a process known as taxi coupon. Now the taxi coupon is this. I buy 10 books of coupons, and they are worth, one coupon is worth $3, but I pay $1. So 10 books will be what? Each book is about $30 each. 10 is about, you figure it out, what is $300. So If I go in $100 taxi, I pay, meter says 100, I pay one third of that, $30. Coupon covers the rest. So there is, it is more based on percentage rather than distance or time or these things. And that seems to me that it's a much better way of pricing them, giving the burden to the customers that you went too far, you have to pay your pockets. So that's my question. So why can't they come up with a system that customer is not paying so much extra from his pocket? After all, Metro Access should subsidize a little bit more. That's what my point is.
Okay, Mr. Kent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Clearly, Dr. Banerjee is right that there's more than one model. There's more than one way to do this. What I will tell you is that in our study of how subsidized paratransit alternatives are designed, that there was one danger. The danger was that if the subsidy program is really, really wonderful, and if it's priced really, really low, then in the long run, it will actually produce more demand than the demand that we're trying to address on Metro Access. This happened in Baltimore when Baltimore established its taxi access program some years ago, and customers could take a magnetic swipe card on a taxi, and they could go anywhere in the service area for $3. And what I was told is that the demand went up by 50% as soon as they set that program, because it was not only superior to paratransit, which frankly is not that hard to do if you offer same-day service. To people who've not been able to get same-day service, that's a draw. That's going to be a motivation. But to then also price it to where it's either less than paratransit costs or close to what paratransit costs, then now you've got two inducements. You have more convenience and you have a lower cost. The purpose of these programs is to offer kind of a parallel choice. So what the economists call this is value pricing. You know, that the value proposition you give the customer is if you take Abilities Ride, you are getting something more than you would get through Metro Access. And because of that, the subsidy is adjusted accordingly. Now, as we've seen with Transport DC, you know, once a program starts running, you know, one of the things we envisioned with Abilities Ride is that we would evaluate how it goes. Evaluate how much people use it, you know, what type of impact that it does have, frankly, on Metro Access. I mean, if five people use it in the first month, I'm going to be concerned. That didn't happen on Transport DC. But, you know, I think to your point and to Mr. Orland's point, if a lot of people use it and consider it to be significantly better than Metro Access, you know, a smaller footprint on Metro Access has a lot of benefits to it. I could look over at my friends who operate the call center and ask them how their jobs would be and how much more easily they could give better quality to people on Metro Access if they were not swamped with some of the surging demand that they're dealing with right now. I think it would ease pressure on Metro Access drivers for them to be able to stay on schedule. Fewer, you know, calls to the call center, hey, where's my ride? And the pressure that in turn, you know, is passed on to drivers. I see it in the long run as actually a stabilizing force, that if we spread the trips among multiple services, everybody gets a share of this business. But then the rising tide of people aging and tending toward disability as they grow older will still provide enough business for everybody. So we actually see this as one of the three pillars of the AAC mission, sustainability. That's really what it is that we're trying to accomplish. So, you know, Metro Access is here to stay, but part of what we're trying to do with Abilities Ride is to actually do a better job on Metro Access, but give the customers who have the ability to opt for something different to have that choice. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
While you're still there, Mr. Kent, I'm going to have a question, then Denise will end this with her comments. As you see, I rarely ever put myself on the list. But my question comes after Friday's conference. So given when the Bill of These Rights come into fruition and the service starts, where do customers call for their concerns or complaints, since it won't be the Metro Access, so things can be resolved in terms of service? How does that process play out?
My understanding is that Mr. Blake answered that question at the conference by saying, pardon?
Oh, go ahead.
By saying that each company, you know, one or more, depending on how many awards are made, would be responsible for marketing and customer service. So, you know, one of the things, too, that I'm going to put out there just as a thought, since I have 20 seconds of your time left, Mr. Chair, is simply to say that we're used to Metro Access, where this is a public agency. We do not say no to anybody who reserves a trip. And if we do a poor job, that customer, if they don't have another option, they might be upset with us, but they're likely to come back, and we have to work hard not to make the same mistake again. If a service is based on market, the company doesn't do a good job, and the customer says, you know what, the heck with this, I'm going back to Metro Access, that contractor has failed. What we are hoping is that this will be the beginning of the disability community having a chance to influence the way that these companies operate by voting with their feet, essentially. You know, if they like the service and they're treated well, they'll use it. And if they don't, you know, instead of relying on a complaint process, the complaint is going to be, you know, either you fix it or I'm not going to use it. And I think that is really our hope. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Ms. Rush has the final word.
The lady who was concerned about the driver who was attacked by someone makes me want to ask the question, what is being put in place? A Metro Access vehicle was taken by a customer and driven. So I'm a blind person sitting on the bus, and the customer, which I don't know, the vehicle starts moving. I didn't know the customer is driving. When the driver gets off the bus to go get another customer or to do something, what is being put in place so that another customer cannot drive that vehicle? Because I won't know what's going on.
Alan, would you care to offer something on that?
We do have in the E350 a switch. It is actually a switch that locks the vehicle into park, so it does not come out of park without flipping the switch to the other direction. But it is simply a switch. It's nothing like a key fob or any kind of electronic device. So currently that's all that's in place.
So that particular day it wasn't used, or it's now, because that happened, it's going to be used. Could you tell me?
Sounds like A.
A.
That it was, the feature is already there, but
it wasn't used.
And you know, I think that's something that you know, obviously you all are very familiar with. Each operator, you know, handles situations differently. We, you know, obviously we have policies and tools out there for them, but that is one of the things that we have. You know, another thing we have is that the door-to-door policy is such that the vehicle is supposed to be in a line of sight so that the driver has some ability to intervene. But if you like, I see Mr. Semmelfritz gavel. Perhaps we can continue this at another meeting, but we'll take note of your concern.
Thank you. All those in favor to adjourn, please do so by saying aye.
All right.